Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You are listening to the Load Management Podcast. Why? I don't know.
What's going on, everybody? It's your man Chops, Load Management Podcast, brand new episode. I'm here in Cleveland. I got my man, my main man, my co-host, my cohort, Adam Caparel out in Los Angeles. What's up, Adam?
Cohort?
Yeah, isn't that a word for...
We have two beating hearts on the same... Like, what like, what are you getting out of here?
My companion, my... Yeah, like, we're one.
Cohort, yes. Now cohort. Yes, yeah, sorry. Yeah, excuse like, me. I'm the fool right here for not understanding English.
Yeah, my companion
That'd be appropriate then, yes.
Yes, my companion now in Los Angeles.
Compadre, I would use.
Compadre is a good one. Yeah, my man. We have a big episode today, but before we get into that, I just want to thank everybody for their support of the Lamar Jackson Kristen Press episode. Probably our most picked up episode, Adam. Like it was
probably
it was everywhere. Like ESPN ticker, NFL Network, all the debate shows. Like it was pretty crazy.
Yes, salute to Skip and Shannon Undisputed. Salute to First Take. Salute to NFL Network. Salute to all the tickers.
Our best friend Colin Coward and Joy Taylor.
Yes, Joy and Colin. Our episode with Lamar Jackson got the shit aggregated out of it, which was awesome to see. And kind of surreal that it popped up on the places that it did. But it's cool to see it get discussed. And listen, it helped that there's not a whole hell of a lot going on in the sports world right now. But shit, we're not going to apologize for that, and we'll take it. And it's still really cool to see it, again, get popped up in all these different places and have it be a big talking point in the world of sports.
Definitely. Also, shout out to Kristen Press, who was on the episode, and all the Kristen Press fans on Twitter who were very excited about the episode, and they were tweeting me, all this kind of stuff. Shout out to you guys for listening as well. A few of them, Adam, even told me like they were just like, hey, we just tuned in for the press episode, but we enjoyed the whole thing. So that's cool to hear, you know?
Nice. We'll have to keep the funny and witty banter going.
Oh, yeah. That's what we excel in, Adam, the funny and witty banter.
Exactly. Funny and witty banter, yes.
Exactly. Jasmine, edit that part out. So, you know, big shout out to everybody who supported and keeps supporting. The podcast is still new and noteworthy. I feel like we're just getting to a groove right now. We have big things coming, especially sports come back. Adam, I don't think you've beefed with any other TV stars in the last week, have you?
No new beef to report. But I have various stories, most especially from my gossip days, to share that will sprinkle in throughout the hopefully the life of this podcast.
You are in Hollywood, so I don't know if you just walk down the street and see like random like
not on the west side. Yeah, not on the west side of LA. No celebrity sightings of recent to report, because everyone is still mostly indoors. Although I don't know about in Cleveland, but out here in LA, the restaurants are definitely more packed with outdoor seating, and people are trying to show some semblance of
Cleveland's
normalcy.
Open. Cleveland's open.
Oh, Cleveland, it's already open. Yeah.
Cleveland's been open. Yeah, I went. I took precautions, wore a mask, and everything. I did go out to dinner 2 weeks ago. I'm still here, so that's a good sign.
I had my first social interaction of any substance over the weekend when I spent some time on the beach with one of my baseball teammates who was celebrating. His girlfriend's a singer. She has a new EP out. And I probably should give Marissa a shout out.
I don't see you as a beach guy.
I'm not, but I went just because, to celebrate Marissa, I should find out what her actual...
I could see you like showing up to the beach in like Timberlands. And
I showed up in black jeans,
jeans,
chambray shirt, hoodie. I showed up and I wasn't wearing any beach attire.
Like you have no plan on ever going in any body of water.
No, I'm pale as fuck. I mean, that's a problem. That's Nancy. My mother blessed me with the palest skin humanly possible. So it's quick to sunburn. The beach is not exactly my native environment. It's not where I thrive.
Once a year I'll do the beach, unless we're at Disney World, because you know Disney World got the wave pool and stuff. I will frequent a wave pool.
Disney World is a cesspool I would avoid for a long time, pal.
Okay, well, agree to disagree.
Let me give Marissa a shout out real quick. Marissa Barbalato, and her new EP out is called Mama Said, and she's a really talented singer. I've been to a few of her shows, and she's a native New Yorker out here in LA, so shouts to her. And shouts to Nico, her boyfriend, one of my baseball teammates.
Shout out to Marissa. Let's get into it because we have a very special guest this week. We have Victor Cruz.
Friend of Complex Sports. Long-time friend of Complex Sports.
Very much a friend of Complex Sports. He's got the Titan game going on. He's got a bunch of stuff going on. Obviously, Super Bowl champion, New York Giant legend. So, really fun conversation where we talk basically about everything with him. So, really, you know, no stone unturned.
No, it's a good way of putting it. And Vic's been very outspoken about, obviously, all the upheaval and the necessary forms that need to go down in this country on social media, especially Instagram. So he has been really adamant on top of that. And we talked about that, too, obviously, because we wanted his take, because this is not going away anytime soon, nor should it. But, yeah, Vic was awesome. I think that we almost talked to him for about an hour. It seemed like it flew by because he's really easy to talk to and a real chill guy. And, you know, personally have a lot of respect and love for him and appreciate him coming on. And hopefully you guys rock this episode the way you have the last several ones that we've had that have gotten massive pickup and a lot of good response.
Let's do it. Let's get to the interview with Victor Cruz on the Load Management Podcast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Load Management Podcast. Very special guest this week. We have Super Bowl champion, New Jersey legend, New York Giant legend,
yes, sir,
Victor Cruz. Probably the most friend of complex person you could find, I would think, out there. Victor Cruz, thank you for joining us today.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure linking up with y'all.
Oh, we love it. We love having you through. First off, we just want to, are you good? Everything good with you? You know, obviously there's a lot going on right now. You've been very vocal about everything, which is very important. So, you know, just, we want to just make sure, you know, see where your head's at right now.
Yeah, I'm doing well, man. I'm not going to lie though. The first week or so as I was, you know, going through it and obviously we were in the heart of it and I was posting things and just bringing awareness and, you know, doing different things. It hit me kind of hard, man. Like the end of that week, it was like, wow, it's just all culminated and hit me at the same time. And it was, I hit a bit of a rough patch, just feeling sad and being down. But, you know, my daughter snapped me out of that. You know what I mean? Like I had to keep myself up and upbeat for her. So, you know, she was my blessing in disguise. But it was definitely some rough times within this entire, everything that's happening from the pandemic to, you know, social injustice and everything else. So, yeah.
What's that like having, I know you've spoken on it before, but just having a young daughter and kind of trying to explain what's going on to them?
It's tough, to be honest, but I remember, you know, my mom with me, she was just honest and she told me exactly what was going on. And I think my daughter at 8 years old, she's reached an age where she's old enough to kind of understand what's going on. And she's extremely smart. Like she, I'm not just saying that because she's my child.
No, like, I've seen her on IG. She's smart.
But like she understands and conceptualizes things and knows how to read between lines already at 8 years old. So I remember watching CNN and we're watching the protests and we're, you know, paying attention. And it clicks to me like, wow, I haven't had this conversation with her. I should probably have this conversation right now as we're watching this. So she can correlate what I'm saying. And you know, because I gave her the history. I gave her from slavery all the way up until now. And then literally up until that moment when we're watching the George Floyd protest that first week. So, you know, I know I gave her a lot of information, but I can tell that she like put it together and, you know, even she, you know, went to bed feeling a little down. But I told her to always keep her head up and that she's a black queen. You know what I mean? So it's a continuous fight every day.
So you've had to basically, you know, I guess teach lessons that maybe you didn't expect to teach so early in her life because of what's gone down.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't think at 8 years old, you know, I think we'd be worried about, like, you know, what bike we're picking up for summer, you know what I mean? Or like, yeah, what vacation we're going on this week, or, you know, am I going to bring her to camp, you know, the next weekend when it start, or next week when it start, like things like that. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, you don't think you're going to talk to your daughter about the color of her skin and why, you know, Black people have been oppressed for so long and years and years, and what, you know, like, not at 8 years old. It's one of those things where you hope they, you know, that when they get to that part of history in school, you can have that educated conversation with them when they're older, but definitely not at 8 years old.
I'm curious, obviously you play in the NFL, but the big headlines lately have been the Kyrie Irving stuff and him speaking out. And at first he got some backlash, but then I think people are trying to understand what he's trying to do. Did you have any thoughts on that? Like, just because I know NFL and NBA are different, but, you know, it seemed like everybody kind of had a take on the Kyrie thing.
No, I understand. I think to understand Kyrie's quote, you got to understand Kyrie. And Kyrie, yeah, has been one of the guys that's been extremely vocal about things like this for a long time. We may have just paying attention to it now because everything's under a microscope and everything's just made larger than life now. But he's been about that life. So now that there's a breaking point and there's an intersection where he can actually make a difference, and all of us can, but he's like, things are reaching a breaking point and he wants to be a part of that history, and he wants to be a part of, and feels like, you know, going back to basketball could kind of, you know, confuse the goals and the priorities, and it'll fit when things get set in motion. It'll kind of confuse things, but I kind of disagree. I always felt like, you know, that's a platform, man. And it's one that was given to us, and it's one that the world watches. So like, why not do something on that platform? You know what I mean? Why not express yourself on that platform? It's the biggest platform. Like, as a Black community, the athletes have the biggest platform that they can possibly have, especially right now. That's why you see a lot of them at these protests. And those are a lot of the visuals that you see, is all of the athletes and all of the different players and, you know, different artists and all of those people, because those are the guys that make waves. You know what I mean? So, so I'm always an advocate for going back to play.
But put yourself, I guess, in, you know, the NBA player's shoes right now, and the idea of going to, you know, the bubble and kind of a stifling environment. Like, would you, and again, what Kyrie said, I think makes a lot of sense in the way he's been vilified. We talked about this on the podcast that just dropped. Like, we all kind of agree that it's unfair that he's been vilified the way that he has. He's brought up some excellent points, and you should listen to him. Would you be gung-ho to go down to Orlando and be in that kind of stifling environment and potentially have your ability to really make a difference be kind of put on hold for almost, you know, for 3 months?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too, because I don't know how I would feel having, you know, everyone in Disneyland just posted up. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I could just see somebody on, like, some roller coaster, like, yo, we got practice. We get down, one more ride, and then we'll go back. We'll go to practice.
Like, it's interesting to me because, and not to cut you off, Vic,
yeah,
the players are like, some of the pushback is, we want to be able to leave the bubble.
Yeah,
and not stay in it, because obviously safety is the number one
purpose
concern
of a bubble. Then what the hell do you have a bubble for?
And I sort of get it. Like, you don't want to be just like told that you have, as a professional athlete, I'm sure you don't want to be told that you have to be at some place
as an adult. As an adult.
Hey, as a normal adult. But my thing is, right, like, if I'm really an athlete, but like, if I'm an athlete, right, and I haven't played, and now I have this finite amount of time to bring to focus in and be the best player I could be for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, like, treat it like an AU game. Go out there. You're in this remote place with all your boys in a hotel. Like treat it like you have 8 weeks to win a championship. And I know, I don't even have to, you know, speak to him to know that's how LeBron's think. Like, he's like, all right, I got 10 weeks to win a chip. Cool. Let's lock in for 10 weeks. I won't speak to nobody. I'm exiled. You know, everybody's out. I'm going to be in this bubble, so to speak, and then he's gonna focus in on that. So it just shows you the mindset of different people and how they look at it. You know what I'm saying?
I don't like the Kyrie versus LeBron narrative that's coming out of this. Like, yeah, just because Kyrie brought up, like they're punishing the messenger and not the message. Like, yeah, Kyrie's message is probably going to end up bringing change in some way. There's probably going to be more focus on social justice there, but we shouldn't be mad at LeBron for wanting to play either, I don't think.
Exactly. I think with Kyrie, people are sour because he wasn't playing this year anyway. You know what I mean? So it's like, you're very vocal about a year and a season, where guys that have played and played a substantial amount of year, they're like, all right, maybe we want to get back out there. We want to play. But I think people are a little sour because it's like, yo, Kyrie, like, why are you – we're trying to get this done. We're trying to play. We're trying to have our platform and build on this platform, and you're setting us back, and you're not even playing this year. So it's like – I think that's what's leaving people a little bit confused or a little sour taste in their mouth.
And maybe, too, we'll get this out of Kyrie, but he could be maybe a little salty because maybe they won't allow him to go down there because of the injury situation. And, you know, it's a limited number of guys.
Someone brought that up.
I mean, because obviously every NBA team can only bring, whatever, 30 people, and the numbers dwindle real quick. And maybe the NBA or the Nets would want to have someone else there because you're going to take up a spot. And maybe there's a little bit of sour grapes, I guess, of Kyrie not being a go, and that could be into it. But I kind of agree with you, Victor. It's like, I feel like I get where Kyrie's coming from, and the taking people away from what they could do in their communities is certainly a legitimate subject that should be debated. But the platform that these guys would have with the cameras on them and all the attention and everyone hyped up to finally see NBA basketball, like the message the guys could bring, I think, would be so impactful and carry further. And yes, it may distract from what's going on in the streets, but like your platform is insane that you guys would have when you come back with the NBA and everyone dying to see it.
And the crazy part is right now, whenever we go back to sports, it's going to be all about the players. There's no fans. There's not going to be anyone there.
Another great point. Yeah.
It's literally your stage with the entire world at home watching you. Like that should be the focus. That's the platform that we've needed and wanted all these years. And has never had it like this. You know what I'm saying? With this attention, with this much focus on injustices and what's going on. Now we have the platform. Now professional athletes have the platform. And now it's up to us to do something with it.
And obviously the NBA is coming back because it's a money issue. Let's not you know, think it's something anything different. But we also know the NBA being the most progressive league, I think they're going to be incredibly open and willing to allow the players their ability to speak and do, you know, shows of support and whatever they want to get out their message. So it's like I think you're going to have an open partnership with the NBA, although we know why it's coming back. It's a money issue, but whatever.
Absolutely. I mean, we'd be remiss to think it's just for in good faith. And
no, it's because billions of dollars on the line here. Let's same deal with baseball, same deal with football, same deal with MLS, everything.
Speaking of the players speaking out, I have a strong suspicion that we're going to see more NFL players kneel during the anthem this season. But my thing is it just going to be performative? Like, are they – or is it going to be real genuine? That's my wonder, Vic. And, you know, having been in an NFL locker room, because, like, we've seen guys who have spoken out about it and have been very vocal. J.J. Watt came back around. He said, okay, I understand now. But, like, if everybody does it, is it really the same type of thing?
That's an interesting point. I've been having these conversations with people because, obviously, this isn't the first time I've been asked that, right? So yeah. I think there has to be conversations in the locker room. I think there has to be, we can't just go out there and just expect people to do things and have these expectations for people. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to take a conversation in the locker room being like, guys, how are we going to stand in solidarity with what's going on? How do we show, as a team, as us in this locker room, how are we going to show our support for what's going on? And if they come to the consensus that they want to kneel, then that's on them. And then they kneel. And whoever wants to kneel, kneels. And whoever doesn't, doesn't. But I think they need to have those same awkward and difficult conversations we're having now as a Black community with our white friends and with people that didn't understand this before. Those same conversations need to be had in the locker room now. You know what I'm saying? And as awkward and as difficult as those can be, they need to be had so that they can come to a mutual agreement and understand it. Maybe not even agree, but understand each other and where we're coming from. And then come up with how you want to stand in solidarity after that. But to your point, I do think a lot of guys are going to be kneeling. And I think because there's a broader understanding of what Colin Kaepernick was doing now than there was then. And I think guys understand it. They see it. It's visible. It's on social media every day. And you'll see a different response this year.
I just hope it's that they do it because they actually understand, like guys do it because they understand and not because they're like, oh, I'm going to kneel and people are going to think that I'm for a cause and I'm just doing it so I don't have to talk about it.
The first white quarterback to take a knee is going to create a ripple effect through the NFL, through the world, really. And that's when we're going to start seeing some difference, you know, a change.
Baker said he's taking a knee this season.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
As a Browns fan, I was like, you know, that's awesome. He has to actually do it, and I hope he's doing it for the right reasons.
You're not just going to glaze over you being a Browns fan like that.
Wait, and Zion's smirking down there sometimes.
Nah, because he had to get that
in. What's
wrong
with that?
I knew that was coming. Once you said white curl back taking knee, I knew that was coming. I knew it was about to say.
Yeah, you knew I was bringing it up. For one, I broke the news over the weekend. Let's say that.
It was on Instagram.
I didn't see you on the ticker.
Because Schefter, Field Yates credited me for finding the screenshot first, and then Schefter retweeted him, but then Schefter tweeted the screenshot.
With he took it over.
Intrepid reporting from Chops over the weekend.
He did the Schefter thing on you.
Okay. We talked to Instagram comments as reported.
Vic, what's wrong with being a Browns fan?
Nah, nothing right now. I mean, on paper, they look phenomenal. And obviously, like, my
back-to-back off-season champs, Vic. Back-to-back off-season champs.
Here's the problem with Chops being a Browns fan. Every goddamn podcast gets mentioned that he's a Browns fan, and we talk about the Browns every single fucking podcast. That's the problem.
We will have an NBA player on, never knows nothing about football.
We had CJ McCollum on, who's a Browns fan as well. They're trying to twist words.
Bro, get out of here.
He's from Ohio, too, so he knows.
Exactly. You guys are mean for being mean about the Browns.
Vic,
I know you've seen Odell, your former teammate. Odell looks good.
I was about to say, like, my boy's over there, so I have a sentiment. I want you guys to do well. So every week I kind of, like, peek. I'm watching the Giants, but I peek over to the Browns, see what you guys are doing. And it's been saddening for most of the season. Yeah. But hopefully next year's a better year. Got a lot of weapons, man. You got, like, Baker, there's no excuse.
We had the worst NFL coach in history last year. Freddie Kitchens was the worst. He called a draw on 4th and 9 on Sunday Night Football.
No excuse.
No, they might as well had us four out there coaching. That was the equivalent.
Well, I'm waiting. Browns had a raffle to try, and you entered it, and if you win, you get to call plays during a preseason game. So I'm thinking that's my in. If I win the raffle, I call plays. And then
What's the first play? You, Baker, Odell lined up.
Four verts. It's what I call Madden all the time.
Use a Madden playbook, bro.
Four verts. Seriously, that's what you're coming with? No type of detail. No type of scheme. Just four verts.
Four verts. Odell one side. Jarvis over here. Whoever else in the middle, four.
You're assuming a lot there, Victor, that he has this deep, deep knowledge of routes and different personnel. It ain't that deep.
He went into the Madden play.
Vic, before we get into more NFL stuff, we have a segment called One Gotta Go. Do you want to play with us? Let's do it. This is New Jersey based.
I just watched Sopranos seasons 5 and 6, so I'm ready to go.
Oh, man. Ooh,
season 5 is a throwaway season, though. It wasn't a good season.
That's a fact. Yeah.
Okay, first one. Diners, The Sopranos, or The Jersey Shore? One gotta go.
One gotta go. Diners, Sopranos, or The Jersey Shore? Oh, man, I gotta go. I gotta go Jersey Shore. It's gotten a little, it's shifted over the years, man. It's not what it used to be.
A lot of MAGA supporters down in The Jersey Shore?
It looks a little different down there now, man.
It looks like somewhere you don't want to go.
What is the best diner around Giants? Well, now it's MetLife Stadium, but
Giants. I mean, you got TikTok Diner, which is like legendary, right on Route 3 here. And then you got Rutherford Diner, which is right. I used to actually live in Rutherford, right near the stadium. It's like I could literally jog the Giants Stadium from there. And there's this lovely woman in there. Her name was Mary, I believe. And she made these milkshakes, dog. They were absolutely next level. I used to go almost after every game. And like call and order one and pick it up every week.
I was going to vote for the Benedict's Diner on Route 17 in Hackensack.
Oh, that's a classic one too. Yeah. That's a classic one too. Yeah.
Next one. Music. New Jersey music. The next tour of music base.
Oh, man. Okay.
Lauryn Hill, Queen Latifah, Joe Budden.
Oh, you're making me go one way?
Three jersey.
All I know is you can't say Lauren. If you say Lauren,
Lauren has
to. No. Look, I'm gonna throw Joe Budden away because I'm gonna stick with my lady.
I'm gonna empower
the women on this list. You know what I'm saying?
Good move.
Every morning, it's funny, Lauryn Hill comes up. Every morning I play my daughter Lauryn Hill, like on my whatever Google situation. And I just play it in the background to just chill every day while she wakes up. She just needs to have that knowledge being kicked, even if she doesn't understand what she's saying, what she's talking about. But she just needs to be hearing that knowledge being spoken in her ear every morning.
That's a fact.
Good day.
Next one.
Okay.
Bruce Springsteen, Bon Jovi, and Joe Budden.
Those three names have never been uttered in the same sentence
ever. We're the first one to ever compare those three artists.
Is Redman anywhere near this thing?
That's a good point. Yeah, I didn't think. Bad.
Wow.
No, it's cool.
We can put Redman in and take Budden.
Redman and Fetty Wap.
Fetty. Oh, wait. Let's do this. Redman, Budden, Fetty Wap. There we go.
Redman, Budden, Fetty Wap. I still got to throw Budden out.
Yeah, Budden's got to go. Budden's got to go. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It is what it is. And Bruce Springsteen and Bon Jovi? Like, come on, guys. What are we doing?
I heard that you were really big on Fetty Wap. Like, when he first came out, like, you were one of the first people really put him on. Obviously, that Patterson connection. Did you see, like, a couple months ago, it came back. Like, everybody was like, we need to appreciate Fetty Wap on social. Did you see that?
I did. And people were obviously posting that first video of him in the car and whatnot, mm-hmm. and posting that the Trap Queen song. And I just remember, you know, being in Patterson, riding around and coming to see the homies and just hearing this song from every single car that was riding by. Mm-hmm. And like in the distance, you would hear it faintly. You'd hear it riding right by you. And I asked my homie, like, what is this song? Because I was like, I don't know, I think I was in the league already, so I wasn't as tapped in.
Yeah.
And then I was like, yo, what is this song? He was like, man, that's Fayez, the young kid, you know, from 12th Ave. I was like, oh, the kid with, you know, he always had a little eye patch when he was young. Yeah. So we all knew who he was. It's like, oh, Fetty, you know, with the patch, with the eye. He was like, yep, that's him. And Monty, and they all rap, they all doing their thing now. So that's when I was immediately an advocate. I ended up meeting them. It's funny, I met them, obviously, in Patterson a few times. But we ended up doing this bar mitzvah together.
Whoa. Wait, what?
A paid appearance?
There's got to be footage of this bar mitzvah. It was wild. It was at Tao in New York City. Oh, they rented out the entire Tao restaurant, moved all the tables, all the chairs, and just had performance in person and artist after artist. And my slot, me and Fetty Wap's slot was like the same slot. So he would go perform. And then halfway through his performance, he'd like introduce me and I'd come out.
So you're like the hype man?
Yeah. So what do you do during a book bar mitzvah performance?
I was in the back, like, you know, like ready. like it was like, you know, coming out of the gate, coming out of the tunnel.
They should have set up like a ball machine. You could have just had like caught 100 in a row.
But mitzvahs go crazy though.
Yeah.
I felt like Slip Star to like Busta Rhymes coming out.
Bar mitzvahs, I remember hearing like Drake got paid crazy amount of money to go to one in like Europe, like insane amount of money.
No, the check was nice. And it was cash.
I know.
The good thing about bar mitzvahs is it's cash.
Oh, even better. Yeah.
Yeah.
They just broke you up.
Funnier was at the end, I guess the kids were like really excited. And they were asking me, you know, autographs and more photos and things like that. And it was like going past my limit. They had me for like, I don't know, an hour and a half, whatever. Yeah. And the woman's like, please just stay. And she's folding up little like $20 bills, like, like sliding them in my pocket. Like, please just stay another 30 minutes. I was just like, yep, just keep going.
Right? Like line them up. And you got Tao. That's always good, you know.
And I'm in Tao eating some, you know, dim sum. I'm good to go.
Wait, let's do one Sopranos, one Gotta Go.
There you go.
Oh, look at Adam jumping in.
Well, Zion, you need to watch the show first and foremost. Young Zion over here still not watched The Sopranos.
You're not going to get me on it, bro. I'm sorry.
You need to watch The Sopranos, pal. You have to watch it. All right, here's the one Gotta Go Sopranos.
Okay.
Silvio Dante, Christopher Moltisanti, Paulie Walnuts, one Gotta Go.
I love Paulie, yo.
Paulie has to stay, right? Paulie has to stay.
The scene of him just pumping iron.
Or vacuuming his apartment with that little roller.
Exactly. I love Sil's the consigliere. He's the right hand. You can't get rid of Sil. Christopher, he was getting on my nerves a lot of times throughout the seasons. Just doing little dumb things here and there and just not really thinking things through. Obviously, the traumatic experience with his girlfriend at that time. but yeah, I think I got to get rid of Chris, unfortunately. I know he did the campaign and everything, so there's a connection there, but it is what it is.
Real quick, favorite Sopranos character?
I mean, I got to go with Tony. I mean, Tony just had...
I feel like that's
everything. He has so much going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was sitting with his therapist, and just like, he had so much to handle, man, between his family and obviously his crew and his own mental stability. Like, he was just going through so much, man. It was like, and he was handling it. And then Uncle Junior shooting him in the, like, what's up with Uncle Junior, y'all? He was, I loved Uncle Junior. He was hilarious. He made the show pop for me.
Uncle Junior Primetime Season 1 was absolutely phenomenal. And the one-liners and the zingers, yeah, it's incredible.
Primetime.
Vic, I'm always interested because you're Titan Games out now, but you seem to do so much in the media. You know, you've been on TV a lot. What has that transition been like to being an athlete to being just in front of the camera so much and just being out here?
It's been fun, man, to be honest. Like, it's, you know, I kind of always wanted to do things like this and just show, you know, my personality on different levels on a platform like like E! News or even Titan Games. So it's just been a lot of fun. I've just been going through the process. And the biggest thing about me is I want to learn, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm never going into anything like I know it or like I'm the best at it or like I'm already, you know, because I've had success in other areas, I'm not going to come into other areas thinking that I'm the man just because I'm here because I want a Super Bowl. You know, I'm here because they saw something in me that they can cultivate and build on and grow with. And I want to grow as well in different areas. So I think the biggest thing is that I want to learn from this entire process every single day. And that, you know, that's only going to help me. But, you know, treating the media like they were my friends in the Giants locker room really helped me, you know, get to this point. Because the media can, you know, especially in New York, they can be brutal. But once I learned that the media and the interview is whatever you make it to be, then I'm good. You know.
Yeah, I'll say this: we're not the enemy here. We're not like it could be.
Some people in the media will do some shady shit.
There are assholes. Some guys have bones to pick. There are some bad apples, you know, as that's a popular term now. But like in general, like, you know, there could be confrontations, there can be misunderstandings, but in general, like, we're not out to get you. Like, we're not like out there to, you know, completely destroy you and break you down. Like, that sometimes is a narrative you have to kind of fight through with some guys that you come across. But like, yeah, you embraced it. You had a great personality. You had a great rapport with them. And obviously it's paid off, you know, tenfold afterwards with the connections that you made.
Why do you think it soured between Odell and the New York media?
Well, I just
Mike think Francesa. That's why, Victor. Mike Francesa.
Oh.
The Pope still goes hard on Odell.
He goes crazy.
Oh my god, he can't stand Odell.
Well, I think the thing with Odell is that he was such a polarizing talent, right? You either loved or you hated Odell. There was no in between. It was just you either loved what he did on the field and loved his production and loved, you know, what he did and how he carried himself, or you didn't like him, or you didn't like his antics or the things he did outside of the game. You know, that to show his passion and things like that. So he was super polarizing to begin with. And I think that on top of that, when he had those when he was on the bottom end of the of those polarizing moments, mm-hmm. He, you know, took it out on the media a lot and didn't allow them access and did certain things or didn't want to talk to them because he just felt like in his mind and sometimes in reality that the things he would say would get mixed up and would, you know, some headline will be made or whatever the case may be, you know? So I think that friction between him and the media just came from, you know, and I've battled that, right? Like you have things where you'd be like, why is that the headline? But if you read the body, you'd be like, oh, that makes sense. But the headline is what it is.
We got to grab your attention somehow. So the headline's got to be a little salacious. So
I don't like Adam including us in this.
Well, listen, as a former tabloid, as a former employee of the New York Daily News, and a former gossip reporter, I can tell you exactly how
Complex doesn't do this. Exactly. Anybody listening to Complex does not do that. No, we fourth players.
That's true. So I just think that culminating just leads to just, you know, him not wanting that. But I think the difference when I used to hear that, it's just like, yo, if you score 3 touchdowns the next week, they're not even going to care about what you did the week before. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That's how fickle it is in New York City. Like, literally that – the thin line is this thin. If you have 3 touchdowns – I remember a week game against the Cowboys, I had, like, 3 drops, and I was just killing myself. And in the media, I was like, I'm going to be back next week. Y'all can kill me. They had me in the joint with Butterfingers on this, like, all types of stuff. And the next week, I came back and had 2 touchdowns and over 100 yards, and all the praise was back. And I'm on Twitter like, really? Like, just like that? Just how soon they forget? So it's just you have to weather the good and the bad. You know what I'm saying?
Did you pay attention to, like, the media, obviously, but did you pay attention to fans saying stuff in your Twitter mentions and on social media then?
all the time. I still do now.
What do they say now? What can they say now?
But I don't. I mean, you'd be surprised. But I understand it. Like, you know, these people are gonna say things. They're always gonna say things. They're always gonna find a way to poke and prod and dissect your life. You know what I'm saying? But those are the same people that when you see them, they want your photo and they want your autograph and they want to talk to you and they want a moment of your time. And you just have to understand that and don't take everything with a grain of salt. I absolutely laugh. Somebody, obviously the first episode of my debut on Titan Games aired yesterday. Mm-hmm. I smoked. I mean, and I'm not ashamed to say that out loud in front of my peers. You know what I'm saying? So, but somebody wrote on Instagram, Victor Cruz went on the Titan Games and thought it was the brunch games. And I was dying laughing. Like, I laugh at that.
Well, that's funny. That's funny.
That's hilarious. Like, but other people, you know, with not as thick skin would be replying, be like, you know, just trying to create some type of feedback. But put it like this, I redeem myself throughout the show. So I'll leave it at that.
The Titan Games. I watched because Joe Thomas, Browns legend, best Browns player ever.
Jesus Christ. Here we go. How many Browns are we going to get in this podcast now?
He was on the show. Vic, he's on the show.
I think we're up to three now, actually.
What sport could you beat The Rock in one-on-one? Is there?
Well, I'm going to X out arm wrestling right off the bat. Let's just get that out the way. I think basketball. I just think he's a little top heavy right now. He's been working out a lot. I don't think the flexibility is really. He's not really working on the flexibility as much, at least from what I see on socials. So I would pick any sport that requires a lot of lateral movement. I think basketball would be one. And then I don't know. For some reason, I'd want to like challenge The Rock to like a volleyball, like get our two volleyball teams together, like beach volleyball.
Bro, just what?
I don't know. Vic, I don't know what that one, dog.
How do you spike the ball through the sand?
he would literally like break the ball by spiking.
He would deflate the ball.
That's a fact. Maybe not beach volleyball.
Going back to football a little bit, let's talk about your New York Giants because Zion here is a Giants fan. You guys are on me for being a Browns fan.
Let me get into it because you're not going to give the context of the New York football Giants. Listen, this guy over here is saying they're going to go 6-10 next year, but leaving out the fact that Saquon is coming back healthy. Daniel Jones is in his second year. Our wide receiver core is getting healthy. Add it to the offensive line. Please, Vic, educate these guys.
You've done it all for me, son.
No, they won't listen to me.
So are they going to the playoffs? Are the Giants going to the playoffs? That's a tough division.
Okay, so are they going to the playoffs? I can't answer that right now.
No, come on.
But I can say this. They will be competing for the division championship. I will say that. And I think that's going to be their only way in the playoffs, in my opinion. They got to win that division. Because that division is so hard and there's so much parity and it always comes down to the end of the season, you know, it feels like. So the only way to get into the playoffs, I think, from the NFC East is winning that division.
Have you talked to guys on the team about what's the perception of Joe Judge? What do they think of him?
I think they like him. I spoke to Saquon briefly, I think, when they got him or his first, when he got hired. And I think he had a conversation with Saquon that week. And he was like, he seemed like a straight shooter and seemed like the guy that, kind of embodies that New York Giants attitude. I think when you think of a head football coach, at least for me, I always think of Coughlin. Obviously, Coughlin's like, he's like the gold standard for me, right? Mm-hmm. And Coughlin had discipline and he had a level of understanding with his players that really went a long way and paid dividends. And I think Coach Judge has that same kind of demeanor. And I haven't met him yet, but hearing his press conference and just hearing what Saquon said about him briefly and meeting him initially on the phone, it was like, okay, I think he embodies kind of those New York Giant coaches, so to speak, that could be there potentially for the long haul because he's a young guy.
Ring season. Ring season's coming.
No ring season. Relax, Pascal.
Bro, y'all, Vic, their teams have never won a Super Bowl, so they can't talk to me.
Listen, I'm a Jets fan, Victor, so I'm going to shut
the Jets have
up.
Won a Super Bowl for one thing. The Jets have won
the
a
Jets
Super Bowl.
The Jets have won a Super Bowl.
Jets have won a Super Bowl.
Joe Namath won like the most famous Super Bowl ever.
Dude. But I had to watch it in black and white on YouTube.
Black and white TV don't count, bro.
Who has more wins this year, Bill Belichick or Tom Brady?
Oh my gosh, Tom Brady is not close.
Clearly.
Like, thank people, you. You're the first person to come on here and say that that's going to happen. For real.
Really?
People keep telling us Schefter, Rap Sheet. Who else told us? I keep forgetting. Le'Veon. Le'Veon.
There's a lot of Belichick love around the league, which you get. But when the quarterback is who it's going to be, either Jared Stidham or Brian Hoyer, the idea that the Patriots are going to win more than 8.5 games, their Vegas over-under, to us seems completely preposterous. And glad to know that you have some common sense also about this.
Exactly. I think now I do believe in that defense, and I think that defense.
You can believe in Belichick, but like when push comes to shove, and you have this unknown at quarterback, and the division ain't great, but it's not exactly. It's not like it's not competitive. Like
exactly.
They're not going to win 10 games.
The Bills are better. The Dolphins have made some moves.
They'll be competitive.
That entire division is starting to shift right now.
And it's getting a little bit better.
It's getting a little bit better, and you can see it kind of folding. And then Tom Brady leaving, it's like the floodgates are open.
And
now
also, we talked about this. Sorry, Vic. Go ahead, finish.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say. I mean, strength of schedule, which you can poke holes at because it's based on what it was last season and personnel. But still, like the Patriots are not going to have an easy schedule. What they have going ahead of them. So the idea that they're going to win 10 or 11 games, I think, is absolutely ridiculous.
Exactly. And when you look at the way the NFL is, they're going to be in those shootouts a lot more than often. You know what I mean? They're going to be in those games where they're going to have to put some points up to be able to compete. Is Jared Stidham or Brian Hoyer able to carry a team like that for an entire game, not just a drive or two or a half, like for an entire game the way Brady used
to? But my biggest thing is that you said it was going to be not even close.
I got them winning maybe 5 games this year.
Let's go. Patriots.
Five or six games. And that's off defense. That's off the defense GP. Like, that's just off. I think their defense will win them 6 games off defense, turning the ball over, scoring touchdowns on deep. Like, that's going to win them literally a handful of games.
But they won with Matt Castle. The Patriots won with Matt Castle before.
They had better weapons on that Matt Castle team. They won with Jimmy G, too. You were in the league then. I think. I can't remember when Matt Castle was.
Yo, the receivers are unproven. The tight end. I mean, Julian Edelman is the only proven guy. And the tight end is – I can't even name him right now. And the running back situation is what it is there. They have a good stable, as usual. And the offensive line wasn't doing the best job of keeping Brady upright a year ago. So – I hope they can do better this year with somebody else after a draft, after free agency, the whole thing. So they got some holes to fill.
Are you in on the Bucs then? Like, obviously, it's not much more to win more than 5, but do you think they're 10, 11 wins? Or
I think they're in a tough division too, but I think they compete. I think they win the division, in my opinion. I think
over the New Orleans Saints.
Over the New Orleans Saints. I think due to like things that, you know, obviously Drew has said and things like that, there's going to be this.
That line's just not going to block for him this season.
They're
just
like, there's going to be some third downs where you might get a little one.
<There's> Olay.
but aside from that, I think that it's just one of those things that, you know, when things like that happen on a team that affect the morality and the emotion of a team, with the team predominantly, you know, composed of black athletes and black men, it's going to be hard to not cut that tension with a knife in the locker room. Whether things can be going smooth, it's always going to be there in your mind. And I just think that overwhelms you and blocks you from getting to the pinnacle sometimes.
Let me ask you this. The first time something goes wrong, is maybe that going to go to some guys' head? Like, maybe it might come out right then, you know, is that it? It's going to be kind of that thing right there for them. You're saying
possible, maybe not right in that moment, but if there's buildup, if there's little things that are happening within the locker room that guys are seeing, or things that are going on behind the scenes that we may not know about, or or those difficult conversations being had, and you know, like we just don't know. And obviously, you always want to shoot for love, and you know, and Drew Brees is. I still love the guy. I don't not love anyone. But it's just that, you know, he was such a figure for New Orleans and for the black community. And I don't even think he knew that.
Yeah.
Like all these years, it felt like he single-handedly saved New Orleans from Katrina. You know what I'm saying? Like with football and the way they played and winning a Super Bowl in 2009, like that culminated and brought the city together, a city that obviously is composed of majority black people and the black community. And they wrapped his arms around him. And I think I don't think he understood that when he said what he said initially, because of, you know, his upbringing and things that he's been accustomed to his entire life.
They were chanting "fuck Drew Brees" at protests. They were chanting literally, I never thought I would see anywhere in New Orleans chant "fuck Drew Brees," and that shit was happening.
Crazy. Well, he fucked crazy, up. So
man. He did fuck up. Vic, I'm guessing you watched the Last Dance documentary. Who didn't watch the Last Dance documentary?
Absolutely, yeah, of course.
If there was a documentary about the 2011 Giants, what is something that the general public doesn't know that we would learn from that documentary?
What are you trying to do, bro?
That's a good thing.
Because back in 2011, it was like Instagram wasn't even a thing really yet. It was just Twitter. So you can kind of, you know, a lot of things were going on. You could move a little bit more freely back then. But I just all of it, man. I think that game, you know, the game in the before San Fran, like the NFC Championship game before in San Francisco, like the night before, we were just locked in and like we were having conversations. And I just, you know, a lot of football and a lot of things I miss about the game is the night before the game conversations, the dinners before games and like the locker room conversations. And then you go back to those memories and you're just like, wow, we were locked in. You know what I'm saying? Like we were having conversations about the game and like talking about it and understanding what we had to do on the drop of a dime. And that's what made us so successful throughout that postseason run, because everyone knew exactly what was being asked of them and no one felt a way about it. No one wanted to do more because it would step on somebody else's toes. Everybody had their job and everybody fulfilled it. And just to put a camera in front of all of that would have been crazy.
What was the best prank Eli Manning pulled on you?
Oh man.
Because Eli's a known prankster. He's done stuff in the locker room for his entire career. But what was the best thing he pulled on you?
I love the Eli Renaissance right now on Twitter and everything, though, and everybody's getting to see how funny he is.
I love it. I love it too. The best thing he pulled on me, man. I mean, there's so many to choose from. But the one I hated the most, because it took the longest for me to correct, was him changing the my phone to what looked like hieroglyphics. Like, I don't even know what.
The Cam Newton font?
Yeah, I got up. I left my phone on the table. The Cam Newton font.
That's how Cam types on IG. It is.
I don't even know what type of. He has like 6 keyboard apps. That's the only way you get to like that kind of font. But yeah, and I left my phone. I went and got like a refill or like some more food or something. I came back. He didn't say anything. He's eating. We're talking, watching SportsCenter. And I go to like make a text or to make a call, and my whole phone is just like Asian hieroglyphics.
Have a passcode?
It's before passcodes, probably.
I didn't then. I was out here free. I was out here putting my life on the edge, apparently.
Damn, that's risky. We're leaving your phone on passcode in the locker room.
I didn't know. Mine just like my second year. I'm really just getting to know Eli this year, really. And it was just like, you know, it's Eli. You just leave, you know, you trust him. He has the trusting face. What do you want to do?
He does look very trusting. You mentioned night before games, dinners and all that kind of stuff. Were you ordering pizzas to the room? Did you ever order anything to the room like that? Because I don't believe MJ's story. So that's why I'm bringing this
up. That makes two of us.
Chops, I thought you were taking it somewhere else.
No, what?
I thought he thought it too.
I have ordered food to the room before, and luckily it's been like, you know, safe. No one's tried to poison me or anything crazy. So that's cool. The one thing about the Jordan story that I didn't understand, right, is like all of y'all are hanging out in the room, right? There were like 3 or 4 of them. And all of you guys are, you know, so with cigars, I'm sure there was alcohol, everybody's drinking, chilling. And the pizza comes and nobody ate the pizza but you, Mike?
Come on, Mike. There's some holes in the story.
Everybody's hungry. We've been in here smoking and drinking. We're hungry. Everybody's hungry.
Wait, now I need to know what Zion thought that I was going to ask.
No, I thought you were going to bring up the Green Bay game.
Oh, I mean, Vic, you did recently say that you'll never live that down, that photo. So, I mean, let's talk about it. I don't know.
This is me in real life, not living it now. Just so.
Yeah, like literally, this is
it's me in real time, not living it down.
It literally happened before us.
We get a lot of slack for that, man, obviously. And I get a lot of it, too, because I was like the OG of the crew at the time. So I get a lot of slack for that. But it was 8 days away from the game, man. We had a full week of practice. We had like nothing we did on that Sunday is going to affect what we were going to do on that next Sunday. Like, and it was a day off. We weren't breaking any rules. Our only person to blame here is Trey Songz for posting the video or photo.
When is the last time you looked at that photo?
What, a month ago? It popped up. It popped up in my memories not too long ago.
No way. And the Apple was like, do you remember this?
Apple's like, we're on a boat.
What shoes were you wearing? You can see everybody else's shoes in the picture but yours. What kicks did you have on? Do you remember?
What did I have on? I had on
the... Did you have Tim's on? Because like,
yeah,
Odell...
Somebody had some Tim's.
The Tim's on, yeah.
No, Odell had the Tim's on.
So funny story, and O probably... That's like me telling it, but oh, asked me if those are my Tims that O is wearing in the photo. Because we were on the plane, we booked a little private plane, and we don't have to get into details on that. But we get the plane, we're on the plane, and he didn't like his outfit, he didn't like his shoes or whatever. He was like, yo, let me wear the boots. Because mind you, I'm fully prepared. I had a whole change of clothes. I was like, oh, is this really happening? I'm gonna bring a whole outfit. Just I need to be fresh, I need to be ready. So he was like, yo, let me wear the Tims. I think I had on like some filling pieces joints from back then or something easy.
Why did he think that Tim's were the way to go on a boat? I've never
listen. You stand out wearing Tim's on a boat in Miami.
We were operating on very last minute. We literally landed from the game, from the previous game, got in our cars and drove to Teterboro and then flew right to Miami. We were living. We booked a private jet on the plane, on the bus ride home. I think it was a bus ride. I think we played.
Is that what started the Odell media thing with nah. That's what started it, right? Or no? Was it
nah, it was before
that. No. He had already hit the field, he had already hit the kicker's net.
The net was before that. Okay.
Yeah, he had already done all of that.
People just my experience watching Odell last year interact with the Cleveland media, and the Cleveland media I don't think is very, you know, they're hit and miss. I've talked to Odell, Jarvis, and Baker about it all separately, and they've all said the same thing without me bringing it up through air interviews. So I just can't imagine how tough it is. Like you said, you say a whole bunch of stuff in an interview and one thing gets taken out of it, you know, and it's trying to twist it in just such a way to make, is it to make, are they trying to make fans turn on players? That's what and we're in the media, so I don't know what it does, you know, but it did. Well,
I think it's the headline. I think it's exactly what it is. Clickbait. You want people to click on your story and you want people to click on it because of what it says. And what that headline reads, you know what I'm saying? It's just, and a lot of people like us, like we dig a level deeper. Like we know the Art Stapletons of the world. We know the different writers and the different people that are going there. After a couple of years, you see the same guys, you know them. So like when that specific writer writes something about you, you're like, that's not what I told you. And mind you, I've known you for 4 years. Like, why are you going to write that about me now? I've been talking to you and giving you stories for 4 years. Is there no level of human, you know, relations that like we can't just be friendly and write positive things because we have this rapport for 4 years? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's things like that, you know, that hinder it. So you have this rapport with someone, all of a sudden they write a headline and take your words out of context, ruins a whole 4 year relationship. Now they reach out to you because they want to do a story in the future. Like, no, because remember that story you wrote? I'll never forget a story that was written by, I forget his name now, Jordan something. He works at ESPN now. We were colleagues at one point.
Jordan Schultz?
Jordan Schultz, yep. And it was when I was injured and kind of in and out. And he was like, fool me once with Victor Cruz, fool me twice, but can't fool me three times. If he's hurt again, Giants need to get rid of him. And I was like, wow, let's cut this one out. Put it up on the wall here. And, but yeah, like I never forget that. And then I saw him and I brought it up.
What do you say? Did he back?
I saw him later on and I brought it up. And he was like, you know, I just had to, you know, that's kind of how we were feeling. I mean, you got to think about it from our perspective. You know, he went to the our perspective journey. And I was like, all right. I was like, I get it. But just know it made me feel a type of way. That's all. I just want people to know that, like, we're humans and that the things you write and say actually affect us. No matter what, we understand it's your job and we have a job and your job is to talk about what we do. But it doesn't mean it doesn't affect us.
Very true. Victor, what's next for Victor Cruz, the Victor Cruz empire? What's on deck? What do you want to get into going forward?
Well, I just want to continue to just keep my hands in all these different streams. I think I have, you know, so many things aligned with what I want to do and the things that I want to accomplish, whether it's in philanthropy, whether it's in fashion, or whether it's in media now and what I'm doing, or whether it's in, you know, a newly found venture, which is acting. And so I'm just trying to do it all. I'm just trying to find the time to continue to do all these things until one thing flourishes and I can choose that path forever, or maybe not choose that path and keep doing all these different things and living in all these different worlds. So I just want to be able to just, you know, be a positive influence in my community that spreads throughout the world, and then continue to just improve myself in every facet of what I want to do. Like, the acting thing was crazy because I just, you know, just like anything else, I wanted to have practice, right? Any football, I was practice before the games. And in acting, I was like, I'm gonna take some acting classes and kind of take it from there and see where we net out. After my third class, I told my agent about what I was doing. After like my third class, he's like, I think I got you an audition. And I was like, oh, what? Like, I'm not even ready. But like, you got to just be ready. Like, there is no, I'm not ready. You just got to be in the moment. And I did the audition. And long story short, I ended up getting it. It was my first audition ever. So obviously
bad in a thousand.
Like, yo, but now I'm like, Wait, jaded. Is this out? Like, yo, what y'all talking about? Y'all not gonna give me this right now, like on the spot? Like, I just got the lat. Like, you're not gonna do that?
Is this out? What did you audition for? My bad.
It's not out. I can't. We haven't even dropped it yet. So I'm giving y'all like a
exclusive.
I can't tell you what it is yet. I can tell you it's on Broadway though. I'll tell you that.
Oh,
there we go. Okay. Okay.
We need the goddamn coronavirus to get the fuck out of here so you can have your Broadway debut.
Fucking coronavirus.
I'd be in it right now. It'd be the run was April to August or something like that.
What other acting do you want to do? Do you want to do films or like drama?
I would love to do films. I think Broadway is like
Wait, so what one quick question. Was it a musical or is it a play?
I'm not doing that with you today, Adam. You're not
okay. I'm just trying to get a little bit more tidbits and details.
I'm not singing. Yeah, no, I'm not singing.
Are you singing? Is what we want to know.
I'm telling you, I'm not singing. So you keep it at that.
Okay, all right.
I'm not dancing either. So
okay.
Just curious. Okay, that's all.
We're just
which dancing isn't necessarily that far fetched.
I mean, you dance.
You're a good dancer.
Your signature was a dance.
Now I'm like, oh, that actually makes sense.
We can't hate on that. Yeah, your signature.
Oh, you're right.
So films you want to do, right?
Well, films. So if anybody knows me, they know I love, like, I want to be the first Black James Bond. Like, I'm fully, like, I post James Bond clips all the time on the gram. Like, that's my, or any role even close to that. But, like, that James Bond got a different, like, energy to it. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, I want to do films. I want to do all of it. I want to see how far I can go. Like, I think the one thing I've done throughout my career, whether it be football or anything else I've done, is that I've never been, you know, shy about putting myself out there and putting myself out there for people to judge and you know, critique and even myself and surprise. I've surprised myself more than I've surprised everybody else. I remember 2011, game after game, doing well and excelling and surprised. I'd be in the locker room like, what is happening? Like, like, I'm just following what my coaches are saying and I'm executing it, but like, this is next level. Like, this is a different thing, you know, to be doing it with Eli Manning and the Giants and I'm home and Patterson's down the street. Like, it was just like, this is,
it's like a movie. When is the movie about Victor Cruz coming out? That's what I want to know.
That's it's funny. I've been thinking about that too. Just like, just not even just ideating. Like, if there was a movie, first of all, the movie would be crazy. I think.
Would you play yourself?
I would want to play myself. Yeah.
You can't play yourself. Like, bro.
You can, but the thing is, who would play you? Who would play you if you can't play yourself?
Like, you can't play yourself, bro. What are you doing?
Who would play you if you can't play yourself?
I don't know. I was thinking about that too. Maybe like Jaden Smith, something like that. He might be too light skinned. I don't know.
Also, Jaden Smith's like 14, right?
How he's old? Like a, yeah, he's a stick figure.
He's there's got to be a young, right?
Yeah, so the early years, Jaden Smith, and then who do we transition into for the formative years?
Who do we transition?
Morris Chestnut.
What?
Morris is like 55 right now.
Bro, oh, what?
Nah, he is 55. Nah,
don't do Vic.
But he look old. He look young. Black don't crack.
Who would it be? It'd be somebody like, he might be too, but like Damson Idris, you know, Damson from Snowfall, somebody like that.
Yeah, Snowfall, like, great show.
Like, I think that'd be a good transition. Well, but Jaden's might be, that Jaden to Damson, that transition might be a little rough.
I'm now imagining Jaden Smith like trying to play football because you have to have some level of athletic. Not that Jaden's not athletic, but I don't you know picture him.
Maybe it's one of those things where we find like this young kid, this gem somewhere, like in the town. You know, this, I want one of those like stories where we kind of birth.
There we go.
Young actors, you know what I mean? Like, maybe find something like that.
Can I pitch? Can I pitch you a movie? Mm-mm. Space Jam 3 starring Victor Cruz. How about that? Can you tell LeBron?
Like the football version?
Can you tell LeBron that this was my idea?
Bro, that idea stinks.
Why? Greenlight Space Jam 3 before Space Jam 2.
That idea
stinks. I can see the Monstars right now with shoulder pads and helmets on.
Yeah, it would be a hit. Massive hit. I'm just saying, if you want to pass it to LeBron, I will send you my email later.
All right. I'll tell him it came from Chop.
There we go. There we go. Vic, this was so much fun.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
But one because Chops, I don't know. We had it on the rundown. I don't know why Chops skipped it. I think he knows the answer. But who's gonna have a better season between Daniel Jones and Baker Mayfield?
Oh man,
it is on the rundown. Yes, I forgot.
I got to be biased and say Daniel Jones only because I think he's gonna be more comfortable in year two than Baker was in year two. I think. Baker came into year two with a lot of pressure with Odell and Jarvis and having to deal with all of that and be the quarterback of those guys and of that team. I think Daniel Jones comes in being more of a leader already and like having to, you know, delegate and tell people how he wants it run as opposed to coming into a situation with these polarizing figures.
I don't disagree. Just don't let Freddie Kitchens near him. Freddie Kitchens is a coach for the Giants now. Do not let Freddie Kitchens talk to Daniel Jones and maybe he'll have a successful season.
When he has a better season with Freddie Kitchens than Baker does, oh, man.
Baker's Pro Bowl season on the deck, 30 touchdowns, 4,000 yards. It's coming. I'm just letting you guys know.
From your mouth to God's ears, sir.
Exactly, Vic. Space Jam 3 coming soon. You heard it here first. Baker Mayfield, Pro Bowl, Space Jam 3. That's what's happening.
Oh, man. If 2020 wasn't weird enough.
Exactly. Exactly. But at least, the new James Bond movie does come out in November, so we do have that.
There we go. I'm excited for that.
Exactly. Victor, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, man. Good to see you guys. Adam, always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, we'll catch you soon, man. Thank you. This is awesome.
Shout out to you, man. Go Giants.
Absolutely. You guys stay safe.
Thank you. You too,
peace,
man.
Peace, Vic.
Peace.
Huge shout out to Victor Cruz for joining us. Man, just an absolute legend. I love talking to him. I hope he takes my idea, Adam, for Space Jam 3, because what I didn't tell him is I'm trying to be the Wayne Knight role in Space Jam 3 with him. You know, the Newman from Seinfeld, he was like MJ's go-to guy in the movie. Ended up playing in the game. That's what I'm trying to do. That was my kind of end goal there.
Space Jam sucks. Why would you want to be in any sort of sequel or revival of the original Space Jam?
You've had a lot of weird takes, and like that might be the.
I don't understand how that's revered. I really don't get it.
I think that's for another day. Tweet us. Is Space Jam good or does it suck?
Teen Wolf's a better basketball movie than Space Jam.
Oh, my God. All right. So next week we're debating sports movies because Adam has these hot takes about Teen Wolf and Space Jam.
Blue Chips better than Space Jam.
Well, Blue Chips is a classic.
White Man Can't Jump better than Space Jam. All right. He Got Game better than Space Jam.
Let's save this for
I just ripped off that are better than Space Jam.
Let's save this for next week because I hear we have some fun guests coming up next week, too. I don't want to give too much away.
We nothing but heavy hitters on the Load Management Podcast.
Nothing but heavy hitters. We're trying to give you guys nothing but entertainment. Again, huge shout to Victor Cruz for joining us. He has so much going on. Check him out on Titan Games. You know, everything he talked about, so much happening. For another episode of the Load Management Podcast, we appreciate you guys. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, follow Complex Sports. Go to Apple and subscribe to the podcast. Go rate it 5 stars. We're in new and noteworthy still. Thank you to Apple Podcasts for that. Help us rate. Help us get up. Appreciate you guys so much. Until next time, we'll see you later. Special thanks to our producer, Josh Dodd, our associate producer and sound engineer, Jasmine Plata, our production manager, Chantel Correa, our talent booker, Shanice Kelman, who gets us all our great guests, our director of talent relations, Kristen Price Harrell, who also gets us the great guests, our senior director of operations, Jen Stewart. Shout out to the main man in charge, our GM, Donnie Kwok. This is a production of Complex Networks.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.